Hello and welcome to another episode of the Digital Forensics Files podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Hatch from DFI Forensics. Recently, in BC, Canada, there came into effect a new law called the Intimate Images Protection Act. The idea behind the law is to protect victims whose significant others or former significant others may post images of them online that were maybe shared between the two while they were in a relationship. This is also known as revenge porn in the media and in certain circles on the internet. This affects women disproportionately. It's extremely damaging to the victim. It's extremely stressful and emotional. And prior to this act coming into effect, there was a number of legal obstacles that were very cumbersome and very expensive to go through in order for a victim to be able to do something about it. The new law creates a far better system with far better options for a victim to quickly, inexpensively, and very effectively deal with their problem. I'm not a lawyer, but I wanted to talk to somebody in our field who is incredibly knowledgeable in this area, so I reached out to Daniel Reed. Daniel is a lawyer with Harper Gray, one of Vancouver's top law firms. Daniel is in charge of the defamation and privacy law group. He also practices in the media law space. He's dealt with this kind of case on a number of occasions. So he's incredibly thoughtful and knowledgeable in this topic. And we had a wonderful conversation. Stay tuned. Let's get into it with Daniel on the other side.
By way of introduction, Daniel, you've got this defamation group that you head up at Harper Gray in Vancouver. Tell us a little bit more about your practice.
Yeah, so it's a mix of defamation, privacy, and what I'll generally categorize as weird internet nonsense. So a lot of the work we do is doing things like, you know, if there's a website that has hosting intimate images without people's consent, or if saying something, you know, there's anonymous emails that are going out that are making serious false allegations about one of our clients, or there's someone who's violating trademark or copyright and find out who they are. So a lot of the work we do is find out who that person is using the courts to get orders to identify or unmask anonymous accounts, mm-hmm. and then taking steps to have that content removed and in many cases seek damages. Certainly since the Me Too movement, there's been a lot more allegations that you see publicly online, and so we've acted on both sides of that, advising people what you can say when you're talking about historic allegations of sexual assault and clients when they're facing those types of allegations, how to navigate those in the public sphere and what's appropriate in terms of responses. And then a fairly broad general practice advising companies for things like privacy breaches. If there's a privacy breach or setting up their internal policies and procedures to ensure that people's information is protected as best it can be. So it's a pretty wide ranging practice. And it's interesting as a lawyer because we get a chance to work with our family law, our securities lawyers, our health lawyers. Certainly issues when it comes to privacy, particularly in the past few years of the way Canadian courts have evolved. You get a chance as a lawyer to dip your toes into lots of different areas, which is really rewarding and interesting.
Yeah, it must be. I imagine it's a lot on the rewarding aspect. It's got to be great because you're really acting for a great cause, because a lot of these people are really victimized by this kind of activity on the internet. On the other hand, it must be very frustrating when you have to go through such lengths to identify who's behind this website or behind this anonymous email. I imagine the process was or still is quite onerous on plaintiffs who want to do something about this kind of thing.
It can be, and that's one of the great challenges that the Intimate Images Protection Act, which we'll talk about a little bit more, really starts to address, is it can be really difficult to track down who someone is online. Most of the large social media and hosting companies are American, but we do run into instances when we're having to deal with jurisdictions that may not really care what a British Columbia lawyer, British Columbia, even a British Columbia court says. So it can become quite tricky and expensive to track things down, because you have to find out, okay, what's the IP address associated with this website, which is registered through Hong Kong? Mm-hmm. How do we get that? How do we turn that into something that can help bring our client a resolution? And oftentimes, the best we can do, because we've got jurisdictional issues, is sometimes to just say, okay, we can block this content from being available in Canada and the United States. The website's out of Nigeria. There's nothing we can really do from here that's cost effective that will actually get it taken down. But what we can do is we can prevent it from being available here in Canada.
Right. Well, that's great. I'm sure it's helpful to people just to know what the expectations are and what the limits of how we're going to be able to help, because when you're talking international jurisdictions and boundaries, it gets really complicated really quickly. So I can imagine that's frustrating. Before we go into the Intimate Images Protection Act, can you give us a sense, just in your experience, it's really hard to find statistics, but how big of a problem is this posting images online from an ex, or what's kind of labeled in the media as a revenge porn and scenarios like that? Is it common or is it less common?
It is a huge problem. I mean, one of the things that's happened is, of course, everyone has a camera in your pocket now and the ability to record and send images. And culturally, it's become much more acceptable for people to send intimate images to their partner. And what we're seeing is, because of that, it makes it so easy once it goes to one place to be posted a million places and be online. So it is something that certainly from even when I started in 2008 till now, it is, you know, a factor of 10 more. We're seeing people who are calling in or having issues with this problem that's out there. And it's only going to get worse, of course, as we have artificial intelligence, the ability to create fake intimate images of someone. So it's going to be something where even if they're not legitimate, we're going to see a much bigger problem. And there's been some massive developments in the case law in Canada the past 5 years, specifically dealing with this, where it's really pushing the forefront of development of privacy law.
Right. I'm glad to hear that your experience is in accord with what I understand the problem to be, because I would agree. It seems like a huge problem to me. And in the vast majority of cases that we've been involved in, it's people willingly exchanging images of themselves with their partners at the time. But on the breakdown of that relationship, when feelings get hurt and things get nasty, people do silly things and regrettable things, and a lot of people get hurt in the process. But what's interesting, I've seen a lot of cases too where people have acquired images quite innocently of their friends or people in their social circle, and they generate images of their faces onto certain images that are very explicit. And so it's not necessarily limited to willing exchange of flirty or fun intimate images between partners. So there's real victims out there for sure. Yeah. So now we've got this wonderful change in the BC law in the sense of the Intimate Images Protection Act. Tell us in your sense, give us a little bit of a breakdown of the legislation and how this changes things.
Yeah, so the legislation is one of six provinces right now have similar legislation. Effectively what it does is it makes it much easier, cheaper, and faster for someone who wants images removed to take steps to have that happen. So what it does is allows here in British Columbia an individual to go to what's called the Civil Resolution Tribunal, which is it's basically for claims lower than $5,000 in strata. So it's sort of the quickest, easiest, most accessible court here in British Columbia, even more so than small claims court. And it allows someone to go there and has provisions in it that require individuals and companies to assist in the removal of intimate images. So the biggest and most powerful tool is it creates a, you know, if we have, say, social media company X is posting his intimate images, the Civil Resolution Tribunal allows someone to effectively force that company to remove it and has significant penalties of up to $5,000 a day for the companies that refuse to do that. So it has creates an obligation on companies and individuals to assist in removal. That is far and away the biggest and most powerful provision of this act, in that it gives you access to tools that can force companies to take it down with real penalties if they don't. It also includes provisions dealing with AI generated images. So it's not just images that are legitimate images, but it specifically includes provisions for generated images, which I think is a very, very positive development. It also does something that I think I'm really happy to see courts and legislators starting to do. So it used to be there was this idea that consent is an all or nothing proposition. And when it came to privacy, it's, you know, once you're out of your home, that's in the public sphere, anything in your home is private. If you consent to something, then the consent is out there and you can't revoke it. And you mentioned relationships that fall apart. The courts have recognized that consent changes and can be contextual. So you might be okay with a partner having access to internet images, but you might not be okay with them sharing it online. You might be okay with your neighbor seeing you sunbathing in the backyard, but you're not okay with the same neighbor recording that and posting it online. So one of the things the Internet Images Protection Act does is it has provisions that recognize consent can be withdrawn. It's not a matter of just because you send something or share something and you can send it to that person having it, that they have full use of it and do whatever they want. And the final thing it does, and this is where I think there's a real room for development in the law, is it allows a victim to recover monetary damages. It's up to $5,000 under the legislation. And that's where I think there's a real problem with the law, and it's a problem with the law generally. There's an Ontario case that had said for any breach of privacy, the cap is $25,000. So the most egregious breach of privacy you could imagine. This Ontario Court of Appeal case says, well, that's about $25,000. And it's interesting because if you look at defamation, which is about your reputation, there are judgments in the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars. When you talk about privacy, which in my view is the other side of this, is your personal identity, this is about you.
Yeah.
Damages were traditionally so low. And we're starting to see there's about three or four cases where courts in Saskatchewan and Ontario have said for intimate images, we are going to award damages that are $100,000. They're starting to recognize that there's real harm to someone when these images are out there. One of the issues that I have with BC's legislation, and I think it's an issue just generally in the courts and legislature struggling, is that a significant breach of privacy is worth way more than $5,000, in my opinion, that it can be one of the most debilitating and distressing things that can happen to a human being, and that the law should be moving towards increasing the damages and the ability for people to recover from that.
Absolutely. And of course, damages is only one aspect of what most people are probably seeking in this. They really want to deal with the images not being out there. So that's interesting. But I have a question about punitive damage. I was reading the legislation. It seems like they've given the power to the CRT to award punitive damages. Is that outside of the norm of their powers?
Generally speaking, yes, it is. Absolutely. So generally speaking, the CRT traditionally has been limited to awards of $5,000 for effectively the small claims and strata. And you didn't see a lot of a delegation of additional damages powers to them. So they do have the ability to award punitive damages. And that's certainly on the intimate image side where we started to see in other provinces some real awards and some real justice. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see. I suspect we're still going to see in these cases, sort of a dual track approach where the CRT process is being used to help people remove and force companies to remove it. And then we're going to see civil lawsuits in the British Columbia Supreme Court for breach of privacy or intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Gotcha.
Or all of these other things. Because there's a clearer path and certainly more history with the courts of awarding damages at Supreme Court. It's going to be really interesting when you start seeing cases come out of the CRT, how they deal with this.
I agree. And I'm fascinated that you brought that up because that was one of my questions. I was wondering if you could use, if the channels of the avenues to a plaintiff are mutually exclusive, or could you deal with taking down the images and then pursue damages if you feel they're higher or the behavior warrants punitive damages that are beyond 5,000, and you're suggesting that you can. That's a reasonable approach.
Under the legislation, there is the ability to use the CRT process and transfer the matter outside of the CRT to Supreme Court. So
that's amazing.
I think we're going to see that dual approach because the CRT's tools for dealing with third parties in particular are just so fantastic. The ability to say to you can target multiple ways. And one of the things that you'll see is okay. So say you can't deal with the website because the website is somewhere in Africa or somewhere in Asia, but the domain host for that website is based in the UK, and we know the UK has good reciprocal recognition things. So you can use the Intimate Images Protection Act and provisions of the CRT to we can't necessarily get the website itself down, but we can say get their web host to cooperate in making these images available. So there's the ability to target all of these links in the chain that is just so powerful. And it's such
yeah, I agree. I'm just reading it tangentially and just skimming over it. I'm amazed at how practical it is. What a great solution it is. And I keep the word empowering comes to mind because it really empowers people who are in the situation to do something about it quickly. And I see things like there's a burden of proof on the respondent to disprove once the allegation's made that they're not intimate images. It's which is a huge leg up for anybody bringing that kind of claim. I see in another one, I was wondering about, you know, the burden on the victims in coming forward and having this potentially publicized. Not only is it an option to ban the publication of the proceeding, but it's a requirement as I read it. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, everything's designed for the plaintiff and the victim. And I think it's a wonderful approach to take and certainly appropriate.
Well, and that's something I can say in my personal experience. I've had clients who have been in the past unwilling to proceed unless they could be assured that they would be anonymous. And so that just added to the cost and complexity because it was necessary to apply to a court. And in other areas of court, there are circumstances where you can proceed anonymously or can have things sealed, but you have to apply to the court. And the default is open court principle. People's names are out there. And so I had clients who were really terrified. They said, look, we're bringing this application. If we don't get it, if I'm not allowed to proceed anonymously, I'm not going to proceed at all. Mm-hmm. And so having that additional protection for something that is, I think for many people, it's one of the most traumatic experiences they can go through.
Yes.
It's just a really positive development in the law.
Oh, it's huge. It's really positive. And I'm excited for you and your practice. I'm sure you're going to be able to help so many more people now that this legislation is in place. And I applaud your efforts.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. And one of the things that I've been really pleased by is how the courts have adapted and judges have recognized the importance of this. I mean, it has been really rewarding and I think fantastic to see courts recognize the importance of privacy. There was a couple of Supreme Court of Canada decisions recently here in Canada where the court has said, privacy is an integral part of who you are. So the information that you choose to share and who you choose to share that is quasi-constitutional in nature. Mm-hmm. And if you look, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that just wasn't the case in the case at all. So I think this is part of courts and legislatures across Canada recognizing in this day and age when information can be shared so quickly, how important it is to have safeguards and the ability to control what we share about ourselves and how that information is used.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it's part of this general trend that the law is recognizing that people have a human element to them, and even people's pets now are no longer property under BC. It's all these warm changes to the law that are sort of in accord with what society is heading towards anyway. So it is really wonderful to see. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the first cases starting to come out of the CRT and hoping I'm getting an opportunity to assist clients by using these powerful tools that are there.
Yeah, most definitely. I will be following you closely on LinkedIn and looking for updates and with all the exciting work that you'll no doubt be doing, Daniel. So wonderful that you're out there and glad that anybody looking for assistance can reach someone like you. Of course, Harper Gray, located right here in Vancouver, you're a big part of the team there that does this kind of work. So they can get in touch with you there and get some help for their case.
Dan, thanks so much. It was a pleasure talking with you. And of course, the work you do, we've worked with you many times, you know, in terms of the complex technical stuff. So it was a pleasure talking with you. And thanks so much for having me on here.
Yeah, thank you for the kind words, Daniel.